Moncrief on News Talk.
You're very welcome back. Tom Dunn with you, standing in for Sean today, and you're welcome to our parenting section, where we're joined in studio by Joanna Fortune. Joanna, how are you today?
Good, Tom. How are you?
I'm very good. I've managed to avoid calling you several times over the last few months.
I think that's a job well done. That's always a good sign.
Got through the leaving cert.
I know. That was the last time we spoke. Yeah.
Yeah. Got through Albert Ferreira.
That's a huge amount.
I don't know if I'll ever be the better for it. But,
These are all the lifelong stories that will give you memories and stories to pass on later on, Tom.
Yes, memories that keep you, make you wake up in the night screaming.
The best kind.
Yes. Our first question is around an anxious three-year-old. And the listener says, my 3.5-year-old has for the last 6 to 8 months been showing increased levels of anxiety and seems fearful of lots of things. She is fearful of most new experiences and tends to start crying, gets angry, puts her fingers in her mouth or bites. Some of the recent episodes include her fear of dogs, the circus, people in costumes, getting her feet measured, going to the dentist or the doctor, giving a present, funfair rides and slides. She also doesn't like loud noises and puts her hands in her ears. By nature, she is cautious and an observer when outside her house and doesn't like any attention on her. She has made friends in creche and enjoys play dates at home in her comfort zone particularly. Her reaction to her fears seems to be getting bigger, and often she is so upset we have to leave a place when we're out. She completely shuts down. My husband thinks we need to be stricter with her, but she doesn't respond well when she's pushed into doing anything. It has to be at her own pace. I'm wondering how I can help alleviate some of this anxiety and help her overcome some of her fears. An awful lot of stuff there.
Oh, there's a big list, isn't there? And I can just feel, you know, that anxiety of having that anxious child as well from this parent in general. Now, I'm not just specifically this little one, but in general, it's not unusual for toddlers to develop a range of fears, including some of those listed here, because they're at a stage of development when their imaginations are enriching and they really experience the world through the lens of imagination. And in their little heads, you know, if they can imagine it, it's real. So you do tend to see a pattern of fears that emerge from that because, you know, they picture a dog or a circus or someone in a costume. Their imagination tells them, oh, this could happen or that could happen or this is what it is. And they accept that as a truth and then they act out of that. So it is quite typical to see toddler age children develop what we adults might call irrational fears or sudden anxieties around certain things. Now, all of that said, because I just think there'd be a lot of people listening going, oh, you know, my little one had something like this or something like that as well. And that's all really valid. When the husband is saying, you know, we need to be stricter with her, you know, I'm not going to lean into that. I do understand it. I want to emphasize that, but I wouldn't lean into it. I would tend towards acknowledgement and reassurance, more of the, oh, you're really scared of this. Let me show you that it's okay. Not telling her it's okay when everything inside of her is telling her it's not, but showing her so that you lead by example. I'll go first. You can see me do it. And you're reassuring her. I would think about a slow, gradual, sensitive exposure that by doing it that way should or could desensitize the fear that she's experiencing rather than that kind of, well, suck it up. You got to go for it because we say so. It is possible that while it is normal for kids this age to have these fears and anxieties, it's also possible she is a more sensitive child in general. And a more sensitive child will feel the world a little bit deeper. So what might be a typical fear for some toddlers will be experienced as over and above when a child has heightened sensitivity. There is a really lovely book. It's quite new out on the market. It's by Dr. Aoife Durkin. It's called Parenting the Sensitive Child. That could be a really valuable resource if the parents listening are thinking, yes, we're parenting a sensitive child. That could be something worth reading. Also, though, Tom, I always think when children are this age, when anything changes in their development, or if you have any questions or worries as parents as to what this could be or might be or why is this happening, it's always worth linking in with your public health nurse, making sure the developmental checks are up to date, and to say, look, something has changed and we would really appreciate if you could book us in for a review and just make sure everything is okay, because they also might have some really helpful resources they could give you.
I'm very taken by the cautious and being an observer when outside the house.
Yeah.
I love the idea of that. I think it does really sound that way, doesn't it? A sensitive little observer of the world.
It does. And you know, for a lot of it, I often, when I'm out and about, might see a child and I go, there's a little observer. You know, they're the ones who hold back, even ever so slightly, before they step forward or lean into what's going on. And a lot of me can really identify with that, Tom, and kind of go, isn't that sensible? Like, isn't it smart to go, well, this is new. I don't know quite what to expect of it. Let me just take a moment, get the lay of the land, and then decide if I'm going to engage or not. And children who are more sensitive tend to just hit that little pause button before they run in to do something. Other kids you'll see will go in and they'll hurtle straight into whatever action's going on and they'll think about it later. This little one might be the one who's thinking first. But that is quite a list of detailed, broad range of fears. And, you know, so I don't want to minimize this and say, don't worry about it at all, Sure. Because, you know, just because it's typical doesn't mean that there isn't something that, you know, a small change could make a big difference, especially at this age. That's why I'm mentioning, you know, maybe link with the public health nurse,
Sure. Have
someone else's eyes and just say, look, this is what we're experiencing, because they may well have information that could be transformative for this family.
Sure. And just before we go to the next one, that thing struck me too, that she gets so upset, they have to leave a place. Is that normal, or you know,
it's sounding like a level of overwhelm, you know, and that's the bit that's just sticking out to me, that, you know, in the moment she's not being reassured. Now, a question of a follow up for this parent would be, when you do leave, which is to separate her from, let's call it the field of action, whatever's going on, how quickly can she co-regulate with her parents and reach that level of whatever her level of calm is? How quick is her recovery from these things? Or does she hang on to that overwhelm for a prolonged period of time? That's worth teasing out and exploring.
Very good. On to one now, which is very near and dear to my heart at the moment. A man whose daughter is opposed to the open door policy. We have a 15-year-old daughter who is starting going out with her boyfriend. This is causing major discomfort for me as a dad. However, he's a nice boy who she knows from school. We know his parents, which is reassuring. When he comes over now, the first thing they do is go upstairs to her bedroom to hang out. My wife and I insist on an open door policy, which she initially accepted, but is now increasingly opposing. She says she doesn't want us listening to their conversations. But as far as I'm concerned, they are still very young and I want to make sure that nothing happens under my roof. My parents did this for us as teenagers. I don't want to be prudish or old fashioned, but I presume it's okay, even recommended, to have an open door policy in 2025. The idea of allowing a closed door just fills me with dread. I would honestly feel so anxious and I just don't think it's sensible. How do I make sure she respects our rules? I like the idea that we're putting you on the spot for the open door policy of 2025, Joanna.
For the whole of this generation. I think there's a couple of things here, Tom. Like, you know, this is, I don't want to go down the my house, my rules tone of answering, but at the same time, what has happened here is, as parents, they have agreed upon and set a boundary that they are comfortable with. It is her job as a 15-year-old to test, push against, seek to defy that boundary. And as parents, it is their job to hold the boundary gently yet firmly in place. So it sounds like everyone is doing everything they're supposed to do. But the next bit is for the parent to respond with, hey, I know you don't like it, but it's still how it's going to be, and hold that boundary. You could tell her that she can use the sitting room. She can use the kitchen, she can go to other shared family spaces, and that you'll give her some privacy with her boyfriend, but it is a door that could be opened at any time because it's a shared family room. And the other thing I would say is, you know, and respecting her desire for privacy, because developmentally, teenagers, particularly around this age of 15, that mid-adolescence phase, that need and desire for increased privacy is a developmental adjustment they go through. And as parents, it's often quite terrifying for us, because we see our kids pulling further away from us. We perceive it as secrecy. We know less, therefore we want to know more. That can often lead to us blurring boundaries and prying and becoming quite intrusive rather than interested in what's going on for them. So her desire for privacy doesn't worry me. And it could be, just to say to this dad, as they've identified themselves as, you know, that it may not be she's in that bedroom with the door closed getting up to anything sexual. It could very much be she wants to have private conversations. However, the open door policy still stands. You say to her, look, I understand you want to have private conversations with each other. Why don't you take a walk and have those private conversations where nobody can listen? Go for a walk outside. And when you come into the house, we've said you can go to your bedroom once the door is open. You can also use any shared family space down in the house. Your boyfriend is always welcome here. So you are being gentle yet firm. You're emphasizing he is welcome, but there are boundaries, there are rules. She doesn't have to like them, but she does have to abide by them if she wants her boyfriend to come over.
Very good. So that's a very straightforward open door policy for 2025. I love his understatement. This is causing major discomfort as a dad.
I know. And I think that is...
He really wants smoothing her foam out the window.
I think that is a big part of it, though, that as parents, when our children are making these developmental, I can say adjustments, it can feel like leaps, though, let's be honest. They're making these developmental leaps and we're saying, I'm not ready for this phase. I thought I was, but now that I see the concept of boyfriend as a real person walking into my house, I realize I'm not comfortable with this. So sometimes we do have to check in with ourselves and say, is this not okay? Or is this something I'm not okay with? And be really honest about the answer to that. Because if it's something that you're going, look, on the surface, she's not doing anything wrong, she is abiding by rules, I'm just not comfortable, that's your stuff. But because she's saying, no, I want the door closed, in spite of agreeing with you that it would stay open, to me, developmentally, she's doing exactly what I'd expect a 15-year-old to do. It's what they as parents do next that's going to be the make or break in this. And that is about responding with, we've told you the rules. The rules are the rules.
Sure. I think that dad can maybe get in touch with me after the show.
Different answers.
Yes, yeah. We may have things to say to each other. Right, moving on. My toddler is saying no to everything. I've heard of the terrible twos, but I had no idea of how difficult they would actually be. My daughter is refusing to do anything I say or ask. She throws her food when I put her dinner out in front of her, and she's genuinely so difficult. Everything is now a challenge, from picking out what to wear in the morning to getting out the door, going into the car. I really didn't expect it, and I wonder, what can I do? It's incredibly draining, and it just isn't what I thought motherhood would be. She is generally a great little girl, and she's turning 3 soon, so I'm hoping maybe it's just a phase. But how can I get through to a child who has just decided to say no to everything? Could there be a reason why she's lashing out? I like the idea that this is motherhood turning out to be not what she expected.
I know, they don't tell you this. This is the thing. They don't. Do. This isn't in the notes. It really isn't. No. And I don't want to be a harsh opening, but just to say to this parent, the terrible twos are not going to magically disappear the morning of her 3rd birthday just because she's not 2 anymore. The terrible twos can become the tricky 3s very, very quickly and linger. And we have to, like, you're not going to reason with her. You know, you're not going to rationalize her out of this type of behavior because she's 2. They're discovering language, but they haven't mastered it yet. So their range of vocabulary and expression is quite limited. Their frustration threshold is very, very low. Their high impulsivity, there is no cause and effect thinking. And when, I've just been talking about boundaries with a 15-year-old, but when with a 2-year-old you put a boundary down, which is the job at this age, you know, they want something, we say no, we try and tempt them with something else, and they, you know, say, thank you for the invitation, but let's negotiate around this. And they tantrum and they protest and it's physical and they shout, but they have a limited range. So it is that physical acting out. It is no, 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 and repeating it and getting louder each time. All we can do in response to this is utilize distraction. Hey, look over there. Look at this. Come find this with me. And redirection. Move them away from what they're doing into something else and then get the thing done that you need to do. So it is, I would call it a very active phase of parenting. You are constantly on alert because you have to be somewhat a step ahead of them because it'll feel like they're always a step ahead of you. But I also think you could give some structured choices. Do you want A or B? But you have to be supremely happy with A and B, or don't make it a choice. By giving a small child a structured choice, you know, where, you know, instead of saying, what do you want to drink? You would say, do you want milk or water? Not open-ended, but structured.
Sure.
You're happy whether they pick milk or water. It doesn't matter. But by saying it that way, rather than what do you want? What do you want? They could say, well, I'd really like a glass of Coke or cola. And you're saying, well, that's not an option. You're going to end up fighting about something that was never an option. So be clear about the choice, but it gives a child a semblance of control. It makes them feel like I'm in charge. And that's then going to lower that protest, that defiance, that no peace for you. Make her your helper. Small children love being a helper, giving them something to carry, something to, you know, giving them a little picture shopping list with three pictures on it so they can tell you what you're looking for. It could be a picture of a tin of beans, a picture of some tomatoes or whatever it might be. And they get to be an active participant in the chore or task that's going on as your helper. And then trying to make everyday tasks into a game. I wonder how quick we can get our shoes on. I wonder if we can get our coat on before I count to five. I wonder if we can get to the car before the count of whatever. Or we're going to sing a song, and by the time the song is over, we have to be in our car seats. Singing things. I must have gone through that phase myself and sang every random thought that was going on in my head once it had some kind of a tune and a rhythm. And there is a science to that, because rhythm and synchrony activate the parts of our, and especially your child's developing brain, that are associated with, you know, regulation, that are associated with connection. So getting her back into sync with you when she feels pulled away and protesting, anything that's going to get you there, dancing, singing, playing. I would make sure a child that has this kind of a vocal protest skill is getting lots of outdoor time, lots of physical, robust play and activity outdoors, regardless of the weather, to burn off some of that energy.
Brilliant. I love the singing to her, Joanna. I never knew you were doing that kind of stuff. That sounds
all the time. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm good at it, Tom. Like, there won't be any tours happening or anything.
We'll see about that. We'll see. Very good. That sounds great. And I hope that helps. This 5-year-old now sounds like another kettle of fish completely. My 5-year-old asks questions constantly. My son is really bright and naturally inquisitive. He's going through the why phase and asking me and everyone he ever meets why something is going on. It's fine at home where it's only his parents or his brother, but has gotten us in a few awkward situations recently. He asked my sister-in-law why she had a belly but no baby. Wow.
Mm.
And he asked, yes, and this child is still alive. And he asked the postman why he had no hair. I know he's only a child and he means well, but I'm worried that I'm not being strict enough and instilling manners in him. It can be difficult to explain to a 5-year-old that we need to be polite and not say everything that comes to mind. I don't want him to be rude, but I also want to feel want him to feel comfortable, and chatting to anyone is a good trait too.
Yeah, I mean,
holy moly.
Kids this age, just they're not great at the filter. You know, they don't have those social norms that as adults we do. And also hold in mind that he's asking those questions very innocently, and he's oblivious to the cringe that's going on from all of the grown-ups around him, because he just doesn't possess that perspective. And I do think that's something that they can do here. They can, you know, be, especially at his age, I'm curious about his play patterns. Around the age of 4 into 4.5-ish, you know, and then upwards, children start playing small world play. You remember, Tom, you know, where the dinosaurs or the Sylvanian families or the little characters are talking to each other, and a scenario is going to be played out on the floor. That kind of play is how young children develop perspective taking, because they have to do the voice of one character, they have to respond with another after that, and they do a bit of serve and return, but they also do some problem solving, solution focused thinking, but also empathy is there. Considering a situation from somebody else's point of view and how they might think and feel about it. I would increase that type of play for him, because it's going to be easier for him to develop this awareness through experiential play than you sitting a 5-year-old down and trying to tell him verbally, because they'll just go, what? That makes no sense. I'm going to ask people why I'm not supposed to be honest now instead. Instead, you play little scenarios out, and it doesn't have to be these scenarios, but just different things. I wonder what they're thinking. I wonder what they're feeling. All of that kind of play. I do think, though, when small children, and every parent, maybe not to this extent, but every parent has had that experience where you're standing in a queue somewhere and your child asks, why is that person whatever, loudly, we get embarrassed and we tend to rush to shut the child down. Shh, 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 don't say that. Oh, no, no, we don't ask that. Oh, my goodness. And we apologize and we get embarrassed. The child hasn't learned anything other than what happened there. The best thing we can do is answer our children in those moments. And we're not going to get into a whole lot of detail, but he asked, you know, his aunt why she had a belly and no baby. And the answer is everybody's bodies are different shapes. Everybody's bodies are different sizes. That's really normal. Not all bodies look the same. Whatever variant of that suits you, but respond. And then later on, you'll say, when you ask that question, I need you to understand, and this is where you introduce the boundary, we never comment on people's bodies or appearance. That is something we do not do ever. And then you can tell him he can ask you questions like this in private at home. And if he says, why don't we ask those questions? Because he's a why kind of kid. You'll say, because sometimes asking questions about people's bodies or their appearance, that can hurt their feelings, and we would never want to hurt their feelings. So it's okay to have a question, but we do not comment on people's bodies. And you just repeat it so that that's the last thing you've said. But children are curious. You know, it's how they learn. They don't mean bad or any malice intent when they ask a question like that. It is an expression of curiosity. It's us grown-ups that get embarrassed, and we tend to then make it into a bigger deal than it needs to be.
Okay, so playing seems to be a big thing to help that lad. And I wonder, he won't ask questions like she has a belly, but no baby.
Exactly. Hopefully, exactly.
If he wants to make plans for his future. Joanna, a pleasure as always talking to you.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks so much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.